Welcome back. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. It's your All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. It's the second of the week. It's part two, looking back on the improvements, the changes, and the announcements that have taken part in the Windows Phone world, Windows Phone 8, and everything else. Essentially, the show tonight will be revealing that David actually isn't a Cyberman.
No, I'm a Dalek.
Exactly, yes, and we'll reveal that at the end of the Space Museum as a strange fake-up before we have Mission to the Unknown. So as you can tell from that, we have David Gilson. Welcome, David.
Hello, Ewan, and I feel like we should have a Rocky music playing. This is our Herculean podcast recording day.
Ah, Rocky and Hercules and a Dalek all in the same breath. Rafe Blanford also joins us. Rafe, which mythical overlord boss are you going to be in this part two of the week?
Well, clearly I'm Zeus, king of the gods.
Hey, what does that make me? Perseus or persecuted? Probably persecuted, to be honest.
I don't think you're Aphrodite or by any stretch of the imagination, but yeah, maybe Hermes or Ares, since you always get so excited.
Okay, right then. I'm going to stop there because I've just embarrassed myself even more. I'm Jockstra. But there we go. Right, you can leave your comments and which character from Hercules and Seaman you think we all are back at allaboutwindowsphone.com, twitter.com/AA_WP, Facebook, Hurdle, Pile, MySpace, all the usual places. You'll find us at the relevant one. So you may recall in part one, our previous podcast, we looked at the big 8 points that Microsoft wanted to talk about on Windows Phone 8, namely multi-port support, new screen resolution, microSD support, IE10, native code support, NFC, mobile wallet, Nokia's map technology, Windows Phone 8 in the business with trusted shared core encryption, secure boots, LOB app deployment, etc., changes to the start screen and all of that. And in this podcast, we're going to look at the implications of all of that on the hardware partners, on the Windows Phone ecosystem, and also what it might have to do with RIM, iOS, and Android as well, and what it also means to all the existing users of Windows Phone at the moment, which, percentage points wide, it's still millions of users. Rafe, do you want to pick up the ball? Where do you want to go first?
Yes, I think we should probably talk about the existing devices out there. I mean, one of the questions was for the number of devices. Well, let's say 15 million, maybe 20 million by the time this comes along. What happens to them? Are they going to be upgradable? And the simple answer to that is no, they're not. Windows Phone 7.5 devices are not going to be getting Windows Phone 8. It's not really a surprise to anyone who had an inkling of what was coming down the road ever since it was clear that there was a new Common Core coming in, which meant changes on all the device drives and hardware integration. It was never likely that there was going to be an update, but we'll talk more about that a bit later. What we should talk about is Windows Phone 7.8, which is what is being provided to existing hardware owners, and that's both the Generation 1 and the Generation 2 devices. Microsoft were actually a little bit short on detail on this. The only thing they explicitly mentioned was that it will be getting the new start screen experience. We talked about that in detail in the last podcast, but in summary, it's new sizes of tiles. You'll have small, medium, and large, with the small really being the new one, quarter the size of the standard tile. And the big point here is that you can actually change as a user between those different tile sizes on any tile you like. There will also be some extra APIs so you can do interesting things with those tiles. Existing applications will automatically be reconfigured to support all three tile sizes. And there's also some new highlight colors, so you'll actually get a bit more choice on theme. Quite which bits and all that will come into 7.8 remains to be seen. But there was a hint that there would be additional software updates as well in 7.8. Essentially, this is going to be some of the key software-based experiences of Windows Phone 8 coming onto the existing devices. There are some things that can't come across because of the hardware limitations that I alluded to earlier there, but it is a pretty nice update for existing device owners.
Rafe, would you like to give me a question from someone who's looking at this positively or from someone who's looking at this negatively?
I do think there's pretty much two ways to look at it. So if you're looking at it negatively, you're going, it's outrageous. I've just bought my Lumia 900, my HTC Titan or
another device. Other phones are available.
Yes, absolutely, because we're a cross manufacturer here. It's totally outrageous. I've just been into the shop. I've dropped £500, $500, €3,000, depending on when you're listening to this. And my device is immediately out of date in just a few months' time. I won't be able to get Windows Phone 8 on it and all that cool stuff, all those new applications, all that gaming stuff. It's really not on.
Why didn't you tell me this was happening? You knew this was coming when it said it. You signed me into a two-year-long contract, and the phone is now essentially worthless, even though I can still make calls and texts and emails and web browsing and play the first version of Angry Birds and stuff. This is an absolute disgrace. You're just being left behind. You've hosed us, and I'm never, ever, ever buying another Microsoft product ever again. And so help me until I squeam until I'm sick. That sort of stuff, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So that's a negative way of looking at it. Actually, I do have a certain amount of sympathy
for this. You seem to have turned into Engadget for a moment. That's not fair. There's a big spread of opinions here, but that it really is the quick and easy way to look at it, Rafe, isn't it?
It is, and I think anyone who's kind of an early adopter or a tech-savvy user does have an understandable level of frustration about this. I mean, if you're particularly tech-savvy, you probably should have realised that this was going to happen, but I think it's still fair enough to sort of talk about the fact they are continuing to sell a device that, you know, at least in software update terms, isn't going to get the full experience. I mean, personally, I feel you do have to actually balance this against the fact that device is doing exactly the same thing it was doing yesterday. And indeed, it's going to do quite a bit more once you get this Windows Phone 7.8 update. And Nokia also doing their best to sweeten the pill for Lumia owners by announcing a whole bunch of updates to its exclusive lineup. There's some updates to existing applications and some brand new applications. I think we should touch on those later in the podcast. But there's no way of getting away from this. I mean, I think people are going to sort of refer to the Osborne effect. You know, they seem to like associating Nokia with that at the moment, or the Gerald Ratner effect. But actually, this is really, you know, something that's been brought down by Microsoft. So, you know, it's a platform level decision. And as I kind of suggested earlier, it was somewhat inevitable. Whether it's inevitable or not, the fact remains that it will create a certain amount of user perception. But do you think there's a more positive way we can look at this?
I think there is. I mean, it does come down to presentation points, which we'll leave just for a little bit longer. If you buy a car, you don't get your car upgraded when somebody brings up the next car. Even if you bought it 3 or 4 months before, if the new model comes out with newer bags, you don't have to go back to the shop and get them fitted again. Yes, when you buy Android handsets, there's the expectation that you will get some updates. But I'm sitting here with a Sony Xperia S on my desk. It's still running Gingerbread 2.3. All Sony have said is you'll get some version of Ice Cream Sandwich, you know, in the summer, you know, some a year after the actual announcement of the operating system. You know, you look at Apple. You know, there's nothing that stops the iPhone 4 running Siri, apart from Apple saying it's only going to go on the new hardware. I can understand people thinking that, you know, there must be some magic wand that you upgrade all the codes and amazingly you get NFC added in. You know, what's the point of having dual core support on your Lumia 900? You don't have a dual core. I think the issue here is more in presentation. Microsoft are light on details, and the only details is we'll make it look like the new one. You know, well, really, that's it doesn't feel emotionally right. There's a huge amount of love for Windows Phone, and when you turn around and go, well, you know, it's like if you're at school and you go on to your next girlfriend or your next boyfriend and you start buying them clothes to make them look like the person you dumped. You get them to change your hair from being a blonde to a brunette. You get them to stop wearing a blazer and putting on a nice biker jacket. You know, it's fine. It's great. You've got a boyfriend and girlfriend who looks just like the last one, but it's just a little bit creepy. You know, whereas, you know, if you just grew up together and you worked on each other's fashions, you would eventually find the things that you like. I think you can look at both sides of the coins, and people who are trying to generate page views, who possibly prefer Android or iOS and don't like the word Microsoft with a knee-jerk reaction, are going, where's the bit in the story that I can hurt them with? And it's this one here. You're leaving people behind. Well, that's wrong for a start. You're not. You're getting Windows Phone 7.8. You're getting, I suspect, a lot more of the software will be coming through as well. Yes, if you code native code for Windows Phone 8 applications, they won't go. But in the same way that Android developers all continue to develop really around 2.3.3, so it runs on the entire platform going upwards, I think we're going to have developers that will continue to program for Windows Phone 7, 5 and 7, 8 because it's upwardly compatible to 8 and they maintain that huge user base. You know, 15 to 20 million smartphones is not to be sniffed at. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people that you can address with your code. Yes, there will be times that it will stumble and there will be a slow switch over, but I think this comes down to presentation. And if I had to ask one question to Microsoft, it would be this. We know many years ago, Stephen Elop left Microsoft, went to Nokia, and then kind of fudged up the announcement on February the 11th and miscommunicated what was happening. Was the person who trained him at Microsoft training the Windows Phone team in the announcement of Windows Phone 7.8? Because I think if they'd called it Windows Phone 8 and just said, yeah, but only the new hardware platforms gets the new stuff, but you'll get the start screen improvements, you'll get stuff going on. I don't think they would be in this situation. I think this is a presentation issue.
I think I have to disagree with you, because I think if they'd done that, people
would have good. Otherwise, it would be a short podcast.
I think people would cry fragmentation if they had done that. At least it's clear. The things that are coming to Mango, i.e. 7.8, is not incompleteness Windows Phone 8. So just to pick on what we're saying about press reactions. I mean, I've been looking at the tech sites today, and there's all sorts of superlative headlines like Windows Phone fans have been sucker punched, and Windows fans have been slapped in the face. Microsoft has put Nokia's business on ice. Now, there's a degree of sympathy I have with the comments, as in, if I was due to be buying a new phone soon, and I knew about this, and I was planning to get a Lumia 800 or 900, I think I would probably wait. And either get another phone or just keep going with whatever phone I had and wait until there was a fully fledged Windows Phone 8 device, which is bad news for Nokia because that means they are going to sell less Lumias. On the other hand, there's all these tech sites saying about how awful it is that the phones haven't been upgradable and that the internals aren't like transformers and can become a new hardware platform. But what no one is saying is what Microsoft or what the alternative was. What should I mean, because at some point, platforms do have to take a big step jump and break compatibility, and that's unavoidable sometimes. But what is if everyone's complaining, what's the alternative?
Yeah, I think David's absolutely right there, because the alternative is not to do anything at all. So I think 7.8 kind of sweetens a bitter pill, but you know, you can't really have it both ways. You know, people have been talking about Windows Phone not having the right specs or being underpowered and all of this, which I'm not sure I really agree with if you actually look at the performance in the real world. But it's now moving to multi-cores and all of that, and there's a big change going on underneath. You can't do that and maintain compatibility with the old devices. And I also agree with David. I think it would have been a mistake to call this, you know, Windows Phone 8 Lite or something like that. You do need to separate them, because make no mistake, there is a big difference between 7.8 and 8. You know, that whole underneath core, which we talked about in the last podcast, you know, it's obviously going to be maintained on the kind of the 7.x line. I actually think we may even see that line continue for a little bit, maybe with regard to low-cost devices like the Lumia 610 and follow-ups to that. We'll have to wait and see on that. That's purely speculative. So, you know, yes, of course, I can understand and sympathise, but, you know, this is what happens in the technology space. You know, there's always a better device coming along, and there is a dividing line. Now, I do think it's a problem for Nokia in that, you know, they have just released the Lumia 900. But the thing is, that is effectively running on, you know, a platform in terms of hardware that's 18 months old. And there is always going to be one device which is the last one to be released. You know, and people are also talking about the depression of Nokia sales. I think that will happen to an extent. But I also think that's, you know, really over-exaggerated the importance of that. You know, most consumers won't really be aware of this kind of software update and all the issues around this kind of, you know, people generally, I think, assume in the tech space and, you know, tech reporting and commentary that, you know, people are a lot more aware of what's going on than they actually are. You know, most purchase decisions are actually driven by when your contract's up for renewal or if you've got a broken device. Now, yeah, there could be disappointment down the line, but I think actually, you know, you just have a pretty good idea of, you know, you won't get every single software update. So it feels like a bit of a storm in a teacup to me. I kind of look at this from the perspective of, you know, what could Microsoft have done? And actually, I think they've come up with the best possible solution given the circumstances. You know, if you accept the Windows Phone 8 update was not possible, which I think you have to, and I don't even think it's necessarily about hardware requirements. I think it's because you're changing the core and it's now common with Windows 8. That means all the device drivers work. You know, it's not just a simple update of the existing runtimes or applications. There's actually a fairly fundamental shift going on here. So, you know, in order to do the update, it isn't just about making sure it runs on those specifications. It will require all the hardware manufacturers to take their, you know, drivers for camera, for touch screens, for everything else, and rewrite them for Windows Phone 8. That was, you know, never going to happen. It's just, you know, too much cost involved, too much work. And that's even assuming that the hardware requirements are such that it would be possible, which we don't actually know yet. So I kind of go, yes, Windows 7.8 gives people, you know, a device that has some of the look and feel of Windows 8. And I think the start screen is kind of the thing that a lot of people will immediately, you know, gravitate towards as the really interesting update from a visual point of view. I mean, ironically, I think actually the updates elsewhere are far more significant. But, you know, I don't want to get too bogged down in this. I mean, I think great they're delivering an update that, you know, does something for the existing device owners. And yet Windows Phone 8 is really what people should be talking about, because that's where all the future devices are going to be. And, you know, people have criticized Windows Phone for not selling enough. Well, if you're going to criticize them for that, you can't get too upset about what is actually going to be maybe 10, 20 million devices being left behind, even when they're not really being left behind. There is an update when, of course, you know, the aim as far as Microsoft and its hardware partners are concerned are to sell hundreds of millions of Windows Phone 8 devices in the future.
Yeah, it's also fair to point out here, Rafe, that they've not end-of-lined Windows Phone 7.x. All they've said is that here comes Windows Phone 7.8, which upgrades both Mango and Tango. We know that Nokia certainly are bringing in low-end devices like the Nokia 610. Insert Chinese name. Oh, I've forgotten them now. ZTE. There's an H in there somewhere, obviously. You have ZTE, who are doing low-cost devices as well. They don't have to make the jump to Windows Phone 8, do they? They can stay on Windows 7.8.
That's true. I mean, we don't actually know what's going to happen there. I would suspect they're going to look to move on to Windows Phone 8. It's actually kind of one of the unanswered questions, you know, given that Nokia said just last week that they expected to be able to push Windows Phone down onto cheaper devices earlier than they previously expected. Is there something in Windows Phone 8 that helps with that, or are they talking about kind of extending the life of 7.8? I kind of think doing it just on 7.X devices might be a mistake, but we'll kind of have to wait and see on that. It really depends on how low cost we're talking. But yeah, you know, these devices, you know, they don't do anything differently to yesterday. They're just as capable. And so, you know, I don't have an enormous amount of sympathy for the kind of the view that they're suddenly obsolete all of a sudden, because, you know, it's not like the functionality has really changed. You know, yes, there's more coming that's going to be better, but when is that ever not, you know, when is that ever not the case in the technology space? Never. You know, there's always, you know, something, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence, especially when you're looking a few months ahead.
Symbian Belle. There's nothing else coming after that one. It's as good as it's going to get. There you go. There's one example.
That's true. Yes, there are going to be no more Symbian updates of us.
You will always find a counterexample for a quick joke on an Insight podcast.
Thank you, Ewan.
I do think, though, Microsoft maybe could have dealt with the presentation a little bit more. You know, just going, oh, we're going to backport how the new one looks to the old one. I think they kind of lost the chance to explain what you've just explained there, though.
Possibly. I mean, that's maybe our role in the kind of the tech media, to actually provide a little bit of context around these announcements. They only have so much time, and honestly, I think the concentration should have been on Windows Phone 8. If I'd been them, I would have maybe said, yep, there's been a bit more, you know, explicit and said, yeah, there's some more software features coming. We're not talking all about 7.8 yet. In fact, actually, in the back channels, they did say that. But of course, it's kind of hard to get people to pick up that message, because they do tend to concentrate on the big points. You know, I think whenever you do an announcement like this, people are always going to look for the positive spin on it, and there's always going to be, you know, negative points as well. And this is kind of the you know, the easy pickings in terms of talking about it from what they didn't get right point of view. I actually think they've done a pretty good job in the way they've handled this. You know, it's pretty much in line with my expectations of what was possible, and you know, we'll see. I think kind of how this comes out in the end will depend on what else is in 7.8.
Yep. And let's face it, if they were going to leave people behind, there wouldn't be a 7.8. You can't provide stuff for people and leave them behind at the same time. It's like just taking your body away from the island of Lost, but not your soul. Oh, yeah, that doesn't quite. Let's move on to the hardware partner, shall we? We've already briefly touched on the Nokia ones, but let's bring that full circle as well, because, you know, it was a Nokia prototype device that was used on stage, looked very angular, but looked quite brutish and masculine and functional. I'm quite happy to have one of them on my desk tomorrow, Ray, wouldn't you?
Well, I think we probably all would, but it's prototype hardware, so it's sitting in kind of a boring square rectangular box. I don't think it'll be any relation to the devices that will come out in due course, but presumably it's running on the new Qualcomm chipset and all the other bits of hardware in there. I think it's kind of inevitable that it would be a Nokia device used as a prototype. They're kind of the big partner, but Microsoft did announce that as launch partners, they'd also have Samsung on board, HTC and Huawei. Kind of interesting is the ones that are missing. You know, there's no LG, not really a big surprise there, but there's no ZTE, which does surprise me a bit. I thought they might be a launch partner, but I think it's probably fair to say we will see other handset manufacturers come on to Windows Phone 8, you know, later on. These are the ones that kind of Microsoft are working with as their first tier partners. You know, you already said in the last podcast, Samsung wouldn't be at all surprising to see something along the lines of the Galaxy S3 design, you know, get converted over to Windows Phone. I think even more likely is actually HTC doing something like that on their 1S lineup, for example. You know, the internals will actually be quite different, and seeing them as the same device is actually a little bit misleading. But, you know, certainly there's a possibility to reuse that kind of design language and the polycarbonate casing, all that kind of technology in a Windows Phone device. I think the inclusion of Huawei is particularly interesting. You know, they've obviously not produced a Windows Phone handset yet, but are going to be, it seems, quite important to Windows Phone 8. I would look for them, particularly at the kind of low end in their own home market in China. But given what they, you know, announced at MWC with the unfortunately named D-Quad, quad-core device, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see them do a high-end Windows Phone device as well.
Now, much as we did earlier, Rafe, I'm going to ask you about Nokia now. I could ask you with a nice, positive, happy spin, or I could be all negative, doom and gloom. What lead-in would you like?
Oh, we'll go with negative doom and gloom first, I think.
This is it. They're dead. Nobody's going to pick up another Lumia 900 handset. Nokia had already given us a profits warning for Q2. They downgraded Q3. You have to assume that downgrading of Q3 was partly because they knew the news was coming, but they knew this was happening. They've done an entire line of phones in the 710, the 800, the 900, and the 610, knowing that they would be left behind, knowing that the new hardware would be done. And the people who decided to stick with Nokia throughout this very tough transition period, the people who were their emotional supporters, their core fans, who would drive their message forwards, have now basically been told, sorry, you're going to have to give us even more money so we can burst it up the wall on these new handsets and sell them to people, and you're going to be stuck in your contract for another 18 months. This is it. Nokia is dead. Microsoft will buy them in 18 months because they're obviously moving into hardware just as they are with Surface. What do you say to that? Like that sort of question, yeah?
Well, I think we pretty much addressed this one earlier, but just to repeat what I said, yeah, I don't actually think people suddenly make a decision not to go and buy a handset because, you know, there's a software update coming, unless, you know, you're technically aware, you're a geek user. I think most people walk into a shop, see what's available, and kind of make a decision based on that. There's no doubt there will be an impact on sales, but, you know, what do you want to do? Do you want to not announce a new version? Do you not want to build momentum about Windows Phone 8? You know, it's going to leak out anyway. I mean, I think it's kind of an open secret that there was a new version coming this fall. So to me, it doesn't really change anything from, you know, what was going on the day before. You know, if you were looking to buy a Windows Phone device, you probably still are. If you're going to a shop considering it, you probably still are. You know, we've known, I think, really ever since, you know, the first Windows Phone release, that there was going to kind of be a release every 6 months, with kind of one being the minor update and one being the major update. And kind of we've already seen that happen before. You know, we had Mango, which by the time Windows Phone 8 comes out, that would have been a year ago. And then we kind of had the Tango update as the kind of the 6 monthly smaller update. Yes, it will have an impact on sales, but is it big difference to yesterday? No, not really. I mean, it's well known about. So I imagine it was already built into Nokia's sales expectations and projections.
I also noticed during Microsoft's presentation that they said that going forward, not only will you have your firmware updates available over the air, no word if the carriers can stop that or not, but they said that they would be supporting them for 18 months from the launch of a device over the entire Windows Phone range, which, you know, I suppose you could say, well, you know, that's you giving the reassurance now, and, you know, Windows Phone 7.8 is still supporting for 18 months down the line, but they have acknowledged that they have to give a sort of confidence in updates to people going forward.
Yes, that's right, Ewan. I mean, I think this promise is interesting. I mean, Google have already tried to do something similar with their kind of their update promise. They haven't really been able to deliver on that. That was partly a result of hardware partners, but also operators. So it'll be interesting to see how Microsoft manages this. But yes, it does provide reassurance to users. I think actually this whole update story is one of the bits that maybe I've been surprised it's not been more commented on. Because updates, as you say, are now going to be delivered over the air. That means you don't need a PC. That's kind of part of the whole Windows Phone 8 story, I think, where a PC becomes optional. Previously, you basically had to own a PC if you own a Windows Phone device. And also, you'll still get a lot out of it if you do link the two together. But this, together with the micro SD card support and the presumed USB mass storage, kind of means it's not essential. And certainly that applied to device activation as well. And obviously we've seen that Apple have done a good job with that kind of same thing. Really important in markets like India and China, where people don't necessarily have a PC at home. They may have access to one, but the smartphone is often their kind of their primary computing device. But yes, having 18 months of updates is a good thing. And it'll be interesting to how that gets delivered on. You know, will that just be small updates? Will that be big updates, particularly when we get round to this time in the cycle again that we've had with the Lumia 900, there will be devices that are, announced shortly before the next version of the platform comes along. So it'll be really interesting to watch that one.
So David has been keeping an eye on the social networks and their reaction, not just through the announcement, but over the last 24 hours, 12 hours, whatever you're listening to this podcast or so. So David, in the best traditions of BBC3 doing some cheap coverage with Sarah Cox in the background, what's the rest of the world been saying so we don't have to think up of any more questions?
Well, there is a debate on Twitter that I'm following at the moment between technology journalists on Twitter about whether Microsoft should have been better at communications with what was going to happen with the brick going from Windows Phone 7 to Windows Phone 8. We have a journalist from CNET, Natasha Lomas, saying that Microsoft should have been more honest and might have tricked consumers just as fodder, whereas Stuart Miles from PocketLint and James Holland and myself really are saying, well, perhaps customers haven't really been tricked badly, and as I said earlier on, what was the alternative? And the argument is going around that we should have improved communications. But if we'd done that, that would have reduced the sales. And I think the message to take out is that Windows Phone 7 doesn't suddenly stop working. I've got a Lumia 800. I'll be very happy with it for some time to come.
Yeah, and there's no way that we could put an SD card into your Lumia 800, even if the software was to allow it.
Yes, because it wasn't built for that. That is unfortunate, but everything evolves, and the next phone I get will have it.
Yeah, indeed. Any other big sort of threads that you're picking up online, David?
That is the primary one, actually.
Isn't that inevitable, where Twitter and social media are picking up on that kind of thing? I'm kind of surprised there isn't more mentions of Windows Phone 8 and this kind of unified core. I have seen quite a bit of coverage of that on the tech media sites, and I think the general message around Windows Phone 8 has been pretty positively received. Everyone going, yep, Microsoft have done a pretty good job here on the launch, but there is a lot of detail missing, and so I think people are really curious to see what gets announced later on. It's around the consumer experiences. There's plenty of hints at more stuff to come, and we talked about in the last podcast, but I think that's probably what's going to kind of decide the message or the fate, if you like, of Windows Phone 8 in terms of buzz. But I think they've probably done enough, because here's an interesting question for David, I think, and for Ewan. It feels like Microsoft, with this announcement, have filled in an awful lot of the platform holes that people have been complaining about. And I think that's particularly true of those coming from a Symbian history, you know, it's things like micro SD card support. It's things like, you know, VoIP being a kind of a background service being fully integrated into the phone, you know, something that really only Symbian has achieved. You know, when we're talking about smartphone platforms in general, and there's plenty of other little bits like that, you know, location is kind of a background thing. I think there'll be a lot of talk around the multitasking and all of that, but also other bits in terms of extra customization, you know, the native code and what that does for middleware gaming engines. It feels like, you know, a lot of the major criticisms have been answered. And so in that sense, it kind of unleashes Windows Phone. The potential is there. It feels like it's a far more mature platform. You know, there aren't things tying it back that are restrictions because of what's in the, you know, if you like, the platform APIs or the way it's architected. Which I think have been a weakness up until now. So suddenly you're at the situation where the potential of Windows Phone 8 is unleashed, and particularly when you kind of align that with what's going on in terms of the unification strategy that Ewan referred to with Windows 8 desktop and tablets and all of that, you suddenly go, it feels like a pretty strong competitor. A lot obviously depends on the execution and what other stuff comes out and the hardware partners and what they're able to produce. But would you feel, I mean, do you feel now that Windows Phone 8 is a more mature platform, David?
Yes, I do, because I've often held to the definition that a smartphone is a phone that you can use as a standalone computer. And because of the dependency on Zune Desktop, that definition disqualified Windows Phone 7 Mango as being a smartphone, which is a pretty controversial thing to say. I came to a Windows Phone from quite an extreme position in that I was a Linux desktop user, and unless I was going to really upgrade my laptop and have a massive chunk of my hard drive given over to a virtual machine just to run Zune to administer my Windows Phone, it wasn't going to work for me. And if it wasn't for the fact that I worked for All About Windows Phone, I wouldn't have gone near Windows Phone 7, because I shouldn't have had to have changed my desktop operating system just to use it. But that's what I did, because I was taking one for the team. But now...
not that we asked you or anything.
Well, what Ewan doesn't know, I basically forced David to install Windows just because I liked him to suffer.
I like that. Anyway, but now, thanks to having removable storage and over-the-air firmware updates... there's not much left now that Windows Phone 8 needs Zune for, and I think we all know Zune is going to go away. So yes, that is much more mature. As for the multitasking, I think developers especially wanted better multitasking, because there are tricks you can do to give the appearance of better multitasking on Windows Phone, but not all developers get this, so you do get a range of quality and functionality in the Windows Phone 7 Mango applications. What Microsoft announced we were going to do with location services and VoIP really sort of is a targeted fix on what people was on where people were really seeing the shortcomings in the multitasking system. But by addressing those two areas, most of the multitasking complaints will probably go away by about 80%. It'll be interesting to see if they do come out and say, well, we can do more with multitasking. More can be done in the background. I'm going to assume not. I'm going to assume we've got what they announced yesterday. But that's better than nothing. I mean, especially if having Skype running in the background, I'll be very glad of that. And otherwise, I would just plead to developers, especially, say, the guys at WhatsApp, look into a Microsoft push notification service, because you can make it look like you're doing multitasking when you're not.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting point, David. I mean, do you feel that it's legitimate from a platform point of view to expect developers to do things a certain way? I use these APIs, and I'm reluctant to even call them workarounds. I think it's the way the platform's architected in order to achieve, as far as the consumer is concerned, a multitasking experience. I mean, because actually the reality is, of course, these devices are capable of multitasking, but they're chosen to, you know, do it this way because it saves power consumption, it's more resource friendly, you know, and because you're running on a restricted environment on a mobile device, that's actually a good thing to do. You know, automatically going to the model of desktop multitasking isn't necessarily the right approach if you want to do things efficiently as possible. I mean, if you can achieve multitasking in 95% of use cases, you know, is that a legitimate decision to do it that way rather than, you know, just open it up, you know, for all and sundry?
Well, I think, yes, that's permissible, especially for a closed platform. If it was an open source platform, well, then there would have to be more sort of respect to doing things by committee and addressing everyone's needs for how developers want to do things.
But it's not that way. And, you know, they're designing it to be the best possible experience for consumers. And I think that's a perfectly legitimate way to do things. Actually, I think it's, you know, quite refreshing to take the approach that you should design for the best possible user experience for the majority of people, despite the fact that, you know, some people are going to sit and go, it should multitask properly or something like that. Now, I mean, I'm sympathetic to the view because obviously as a kind of a Git user, I'm used to, you know, the traditional multitasking from a Symbian point of view. And part of me goes, well, if Symbian can do it, surely the modern operating systems can do it. But at the same time, I can also accept an argument that because of, you know, resource constraints, because you're running on a mobile device, actually you should look at not necessarily the technical way to do it, but, you know, the best way to do it from a user experience perspective.
And it's more a question of, does it need to do it in the desktop way as well? And I think it is legitimate for, it's Microsoft's platform, so it's their party. So if they are taking leadership on how to do things, yes, that's legitimate. And say to developers, well, we need you to do it this way, as long as they listen to concerns and change tack when things aren't working.
Yeah, which is kind of what we're reading into what they've done here on location and VoIP. Well, one thing I think is really important, and you kind of brought this up when you mentioned WhatsApp, is developers have to actually use these schemes when they're available in order to give, you know, the best experience. You can't just port it and hope for the best. You actually need to think intelligently about how to get the best experience on the platform. Because, you know, you can create an exercise tracking, a GPS tracking application quite easily and just leave it running in the foreground. But if you have to do a bit of extra work to make it run in the background, of course you should be doing that, because it will give your users, you know, a better experience. They'll be more likely to buy an application for you or additional services. But this is something I think all the platforms face, is actually making developers, you know, code in an efficient, or rather, you know, the best possible way. And that does sometimes require a bit of education. So it'll be interesting to see whether Microsoft can kind of push that message home a bit. You know, they certainly try to do it with the push notification service, but there are plenty of apps out there that you think they could improve this by using a push notification service. Now, of course, there are costs to doing so. I accept that. But one of the things, you know, when we're creating our own All About Windows Phone app, we, you know, face is how do we, you know, handle updates? And, you know, you can actually set a background process and have it check an RSS feed and do updates that way. And I thought, no, actually, I think it's going to be more efficient if we do push notifications and have that as an option, because it's less of an impact on battery life. And, you know, people are frankly more likely to leave something like that running if they can get it through the push notification system. It turned out to be a lucky way to do it, because on the Lumia 610, of course, they switch off some of those background agents. And so on the 610, you will still get the push notification through the All About Windows Phone app. And I think that's, you know, something that could be applied more generally in terms of lessons developers need to take on board.
Although, Riff, what would you say to the argument if a developer says, was listening to this and came up to you at a conference or press event and said to you, well, it was all very well you saying that we can look into how to do things differently for our Windows Phone 7 or Windows Phone 8 application, but it still doesn't have enough market share to make it worthwhile doing. Time is money for us, and we are not going to make a proportional amount of income from Windows Phone because there just aren't enough people using it, so we're not going to put the time into it.
And I think that's a perfectly legitimate argument. You know, Microsoft do have this chicken and egg problem with creating apps and the number of devices out there. I would say, though, that the effort involved in doing this extra kind of optimization work, or, you know, fitting it better to the platform, and it's, you know, the same as, you know, designing it so the UI fits to the platform, or you're, you know, using the style guideline, that extra effort, it's not insignificant, but it's not as big as actually getting your application going on there in the first place. And I actually think the returns from doing those optimizations more than outweigh the extra time you spend on it. So if you've already made the decision to go Windows Phone, I actually think it's a no-brainer to make sure it's properly optimized. You may not choose to go the full amount, and there are some things you say, no, it's not worth our while doing. And that's fair enough. But I think there are basic bits that, you know, should be on every developer's list.
And if I look at this from not the developer's perspective, which obviously is quite detailed and involved, but the consumer's perspective, let's try it this way, if you don't mind, right? If we call Windows Phone 1.0, I know technically it's 7.0, but let's go with 1.0, yep?
Yep.
Windows Phone Mango is another version jump, so 2.0.
Yep.
You then have Tango, which is a slight increase, which is a 0.1 increase from 7.5.7.6. So let's do that in our strange drumming system now. We now have Windows Phone 2.1.
Yep.
Yep. So we've now moved on to Windows Phone 8, which is one jump up. So we now have Windows 3.1.
I was wondering where you were going with that. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Tradition dictates that's how long it takes Microsoft to get it right. There is a compatibility break between 2.0 and 3.1, and you know that's to be expected. They've done that in the past. We should all have been aware of it. They've done it again. It's like Star Trek: Odd Movies are rubbish. Windows needs to get to version 3.1. Even by changing the numbers, we've found them out.
I see what you've done there. Actually, I think it comes back to the point earlier I made. It's about the maturity of the platform. Yep. I do feel it's a lot closer. In all of this, I would stress we have only, you know, heard the kind of the grand overview. There's lots of unanswered questions. So, you know, pardon me, you know, hold back any enthusiasm because we don't have the full picture yet. But I do think Microsoft have delivered on all the basics. But yeah, Windows 3.1. And in some ways, actually, I feel that's where Windows Phone is, you know, there's still a lot more work to do even with Windows Phone 8, but you can start to see the potential.
Yes. So join us in 3 years time when we'll be talking about Windows Phone 95 and how much of a dog's breakfast it is with the NT kernel and some new graphical system going on top of it. But for now, we're getting close to the time when it's the shorter of the two parts of the podcast this week. But just very briefly, let's talk about the impact that we might see this on other hardware partners and other ecosystems around. Nice and brief, obviously we've already talked about Nokia. Samsung, Rafe, we always wondered why there wasn't any Samsung devices in Q2 and Q3. Obviously they're focusing on the Galaxy S3, but they probably just wanted to sidestep this mess of, oh, we won't be having an upgrade route for you.
Aside from the fact they actually have released a couple of devices in the show.
Yeah, we don't mention that, it ruins the joke, okay?
Yes, I know. But yeah, I mean, it's quite clear that Samsung basically did some Mango devices and then they were waiting for Windows Phone 8. And frankly, you can see why now.
Yep. Yeah. HTC, we still don't know whether they're really in it or not. I know you had some chat with them, mostly on Android devices a while back, Rafe. Are what we're seeing now still sort of fits in with HTC's plans?
I think it does. I actually think HTC will go Windows Phone 8 in quite a big way. I mean, certainly when I spoke to them, they said, yep, yeah, keep an eye. We're going to be doing some interesting things. I think from the strategy point of view, it actually makes sense to have a strong Windows Phone 8 device. And I think, you know, the halo effect that Nokia has or the growing ecosystem will actually benefit HTC far more than it does having the extra competition. Because, you know, operators are always looking for a second device. I think the perfect example of that is, you know, the Titan 2 being matched up with the Nokia 900 on AT&T earlier this year. So I expect that to happen. And HTC have some really strong designers on board. I think probably, you know, along with Apple and Nokia, they're the strongest design team in the industry. Samsung have got better, but a lot of their devices still feel a bit uninspired. So I'll be really interested to see what, you know, HTC can do when, you know, combining, you know, some of the design ethos that's gone into Metro and Windows Phone 8 with their own expertise. You know, well worth watching.
Obviously, we have the Chinese expansion through Huawei. Hold on, Rafe, am I pronouncing that right?
Huawei.
I'm fine, thank you. And so they are with that. What about outside of the hardware partners? I mean, we talked briefly in the last podcast about the effect this is going to have on Research and Motion. Disastrous is probably the one word description here.
It is. It's hard to avoid looking at this and going, wow, this is a really strong enterprise update. And it's, you know, going into a lot of areas where RIM has been traditionally very strong. We don't actually have the details on this. We're kind of making a certain number of assumptions based on, you know, this Windows Phone Core and the security model will actually, you know, open up all kinds of markets. But I don't think it's unreasonable to assume, you know, that a lot of, you know, CIOs and companies will be looking at this and going, yeah, I see how I can integrate that into my infrastructure. And kind of the fly in the ointment here really for Microsoft, I think, is the bring your own device trend that's become so much stronger in the last couple of years. You know, people talking now it's anything up to 50% of devices in the workplace bring your own device. I people are bringing their own personal devices into the workplace and want them integrated. But there's still a massive market out there for, you know, big company contracts. And it's kind of the old adage that, you know, nobody ever got fired for buying Microsoft. And of course, it's, you know, a bit of an oversimplification. But I do think there are some really strong business potential in Windows Phone here. And I think that the company that will suffer most from that is RIM.
Yeah, Tim Cook, he might have got fired for buying Microsoft, but he doesn't have to worry about that anymore. Rafe, what about Apple and iOS then? I mean, you know, they are the next ones up in the market share. Android is like 55%. We'll get David to touch on that in a second. But, you know, to me, this looks like you then have Apple, sleek, sexy, sports car, feminine, and you have Microsoft being butch and masculine and big 4x4 SUVs. There's almost complementary here, as if Microsoft don't really want to go toe-to-toe with Apple. They're quite happily sort of enemy of the enemy is not Android.
I don't know about that. I still think, you know, kind of not copying iOS, but certainly seeing it as a kind of a model that they can follow is still very much in Microsoft's mind with Windows Phone 8. I mean, I actually think it's, you know, it's equal appeal to masculine and feminine. I don't really see Windows Phone as particularly masculine or iPhone. Well, maybe that's something that'd be interesting to get some listener feedback and comments on that. I do think Apple can be quite flattered by Windows Phone 8 because, you know, some of the things that Microsoft are doing are basically flagged up by Apple beforehand, and indeed other manufacturers. You know, let's not pretend it's a slavish copy or anything, because actually Microsoft are doing a lot of fresh things, and that extends into the UI and the Metro, I think, is a very obvious one, but also in some of the ways they're, I think, far more open to third-party integration than Apple is, arguably. You look at something like the Wallet Hub, that's a very different approach to Apple, and VoIP is another great example of that. It'll be interesting to see how much that extends to other areas. You know, one wonders about the integration of social networking or the uploading of things from pictures and videos. That's all kind of, we need to hear more about that. And I think for Apple, probably the concern is Windows Phone will look like a much more viable competitor. I mean, I'm sure they were all really worried when kind of Nokia signed up to Windows Phone, because that kind of legitimized the platform and gave it some real strength. And now looking at Windows Phone 8, you look at all those features and you go, yeah, it's even closer now to feature parity. And, you know, you can make a easy argument that there is a good reason to choose each of the major platforms out there. You know, there isn't one that feels spectacularly weaker than the other. If you're a consumer, you'll have a good mobile experience on all of them. Of course, you know, you will end up choosing one based on your usage scenario and your personal brands and all of that kind of thing. But I think Apple doesn't have the lead that it did when it first launched the iPhone. And that will be a concern. And that's why, you know, some of the market analysts out there are predicting that in time Windows Phone will overtake Apple, because it's got, you know, basically a broader addressable market. It's going to be going after low-end devices, mid-tier devices, high-end devices, and there's going to be multiple manufacturers involved. You know, that's both a weakness and a strength. You know, it's a weakness because you don't have the kind of the singular drive that Apple does, but the advantage is, you know, you've got more companies working on it, addressing more price points, different types of devices. And I still think the mobile market, a lot of it is about price segmentation and device and design choice. And that's something, you know, Apple is coming up against. You know, they've got to, you know, 20% share in market in smartphones, may go up a little bit more, but it feels like it's hard for them to expand beyond that without expanding their product range. And that then gets interesting. How do they do that without diluting the experience?
And David, as promised, we'll come to you. What does Windows Phone 8 and everything that we've spoken about over the last few podcasts mean when we compare it to the Android market?
Well, I think the biggest effect is going to be in the enterprise market, just as we were talking about. On the consumer side, there is going to be the spec war, which will placate most of the press, I think. And we are going to get a wider zoo of devices, seen as we were saying that there are hardware partners, most of which have been keeping their powder dry until Windows Phone 8. In the enterprise, Android should be worried for the same reasons that RIM should be worried. Businesses already have infrastructure in place for supporting Microsoft-compliant phones. Mango already supported Exchange, so you could get calendar and email and like remote white personal information, but there was no provision for application or policy deployment. Now with Windows Phone 8, all that's changed. It does, and as Rafe said, if Windows Phone 8 does push into the lower tier, small, medium enterprises can buy phones in bulk for their employees and easily administer them, which you can't do with Android. Plus, there's also going to be a halo effect with Windows 8 as that slowly bleeds into the enterprise, which, unless businesses start using Chromebooks, there isn't going to be that same synergy there. And I can't believe I just used that word.
What, synergy or Chromebook?
Both.
Yeah. And also security as well, because Windows Phone 8 is more locked down. However, I'll be interesting to see with the native code and if there is any inter-process communication, whether there is a sacrifice in security, we will see. But in general, the malware is on Android. To what degree, it won't get into, but I'm sure there's a greater percentage of malware on Android than there is on Windows Phone, and I expect that difference will remain. So businesses will be keener on going with a Microsoft device rather than an Android device, which are still very focused towards consumers anyway.
Yeah, I think you make a good point there, David, about the fact that Google doesn't kind of have the desktop component that Apple and Microsoft obviously do have. And, you know, you could almost extend that into tablets as well. You know, that's an unanswered question at the moment. But there does seem to be kind of a lot of, you know, general comment going around that Android has missed its, you know, upmarket gap with the tablets, and you've got the Windows 8 tablets coming along. I think you need to wait and see what happens there first, but undoubtedly the kind of the strategy of the triple play, you know, across computers, mobile, and, you know, set-top boxes does feel a lot stronger from the Microsoft perspective than anyone else. Now Apple are trying to do the same thing, but may suffer a little bit from the fact, you know, they are smaller, obviously, in, you know, under the TV and on the desktop. They're strong in tablets, they're strong in mobile. And that really depends on how important is this kind of unification thing going to be. And I'm actually a firm believer that this is a really important trend in kind of consumer electronics and mobile in particular. The connection to the desktop to a certain extent, but particularly to tablets, companion screens in the home, to the TV, is going to become more and more important. And Windows Phone 8, because of its positioning within kind of the whole Metro big push and the Microsoft unification strategy, feels like it's, you know, the most elegant proposition that's being offered. So I think that could have an impact on Android in the longer term. In the short term, I don't expect a major impact. You know, we're going to be getting an update to Android later in the year, and I think there'll be more features there, and I think it will still appeal to those who like fiddling with their devices. Kind of those who want to, you know, configure everything are still going to find Android more attractive, and those who like the open source and the kind of Linux base, that's still going to be there. And they have this massive installed base and lots of partners out there. You know, I don't expect Windows Phone 8 to suddenly erode that, but I do think it's, you know, a more viable competitor, and some of the licensees are going to be looking and going, okay, actually I think, you know, Windows Phone 8 provides a realistic alternative to Android in my, you know, portfolio. And that's companies like HTC and Samsung. But you also wonder whether some of the others, which are finding it very difficult to extract value, might also come to that, you know, same conclusion. As I said, I don't think it's going to have an immediate negative impact. But I think, you know, the whole message for me of Windows Phone 8 is that sense of maturity. And so it feels like, you know, it's on an equal footing the competitors. Now it obviously doesn't have the incumbency advantage, but it does have other things going for it, and, you know, I think that will be the story that, you know, Microsoft and its hardware partners have to tell over the next year.
I think it actually reminds me very much of the British mathematician Andrew Wiles, who was famous for proving Fermat's last theorem. He decided that the only way that he could actually sit down was to basically put himself into seclusion and work on this problem for 3 years. Now, he had other papers that he just basically kept in storage and published every 6 months, so everybody would think that he's doing something. I look back at the laptop that I had before the laptop that I'm using to have this Skype conversation with, and it had the Windows Media Center in there with this new blocky interface for navigating your albums videos called Metro. And throughout, you know, the last 5 or 6 years, Microsoft have been putting in the building blocks to create this power play, this capture everything, the Xbox, the laptop. Now we know it's called the Surface and the Windows Phone. They tried with media players. Media players went out of fashion, so the Zoom becomes a heirloom, but it's available there as well. And Andrew Wiles one day just went in, did a presentation on linear L curves and mod representations and such like, and the mathematicians in the audience know the one I'm talking about. Elliptic curves and L modifications, that's the one. And he just went bang, bang, bang. Oh, and it's just bang, bang, bang. There's this bang, bang. Oh, by the way, there's Fermat's last theorem sorted. And everybody just went, oh, wow, you must be working on that for so long. And it's all suddenly become clear. It's happening now with Microsoft. This is the reveal moment. This is everybody suddenly starting to join all these dots together. And it's just wonderful. Irrespective of if it's actually going to work in the marketplace or not, to have a long-range plan actually start to come off and everybody getting it, I think is amazing. And with those profound words, shocking the rest of the podcast into silence, we'll remind you of you can leave your comments back on the website, www.allaboutwindowsphone.com. You find us on Twitter and Facebook as well. Thanks to David and Rafe. We'll come to them in a second. Guys, one word to describe what you think of the future of Windows Phone. I'll give you my word first to give you just a little bit more thinking time before we get the goodbyes ready. And my word is competent. Competent that it can do all the tasks that it set out to do, competent that it can work in the marketplace, competent that it can deliver. I think that's the perfect word in my mind to sum up where we're going on this one. David, word from yourself?
Pensive. The potential's there and it would be a shame for it to be lost, but it's by no means guaranteed success.
Yeah, well, thank you for joining on the podcast, David. You also had Rafe Blanford. Rafe, your word to finish off?
I think I would say potential. David just mentioned it there, but I think with this update, Windows Phone feels much less bound than it did previously. I mean, I'm sure we're going to be talking about this for many podcasts to come. And at the moment, I think a lot of our comments are probably made in the kind of the first reflections of excitement around all these announcements. And so we may become more skeptical as time goes by. But it really does feel like Microsoft have got their mobile platform to a maturity where it really does need to be taken seriously within the mobile industry. And I think what they'll do with this is have a lot of the commentary go way around about expecting it to fail altogether. And Microsoft is very much here. The question becomes, how much of a part will they play?
So there we go. You can leave your single word comment or more in depth back on the website. It's been a double bill podcast this week, but it has been a big week of news. We'll keep you up to date with all of that, the ongoing links and flows around the world of Windows Phone's reviews of the games and the applications that are coming out now for the handsets that still work now that are running Windows Phone 7.5 and will continue to work for many years to come. Thank you to David and Ray. Thank you also to Steve for keeping everything taking over while we've been doing the mammoth recording session. Thank you all out there for listening as well. I'm Ewan Spence. Pleasure that you choose to listen to our comments, thoughts and punditry on Windows Phone. So thank you as well. Ta-ra for now.